always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Happy Tuesday.
Heck yeah. Happy, excellent Tuesday. Great day for radio.
Happy
wanted to be.
Happy Titanic Tuesday. That's what we'll call it. June 18th, 2024. It's 4:05 in the p.m. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show with producer Joey V on the Wheels of Steel, our executive producer extraordinaire. Welcome to Tuesday. We got a huge show for all y'all here today. We're going to be speaking to David Stokes and Dr. Bob Onder and doing lots more for you as we bring up to speed on everything here, far, and in between. This is 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. I'm Tim Jones. Chris Harp's here as well. Chris, you were in Jefferson County last night.
I was in Jefferson County.
You,
I was going
to talk. Do you need to say hello to anybody?
Well, first of all, I want to give congratulations and shout out to our colleague Mike Ferguson, who did a wonderful job moderating the event there. And I was surprised. I had to go out for a second, and I walked out, and I saw our friend and owner Joe Rush in the back there. And so we had a really large crowd. All the candidates that are running for office there in Jefferson County were there, very articulate. And I think people learned a lot. And I got to tell you, and Mike Ferguson can attest to this as well, Newstalk STL has a lot of fans in Jeffco, and a lot of people listen to our signal, Tim, on the app.
Yes. Excellent, indeed. Yeah, we are big in Jefferson County and in all the collar counties, in the suburbs and the exurbs, and even in the city of St. Louis, because we love our city Republicans and conservatarians down there as well. Very spirited contests in Jefferson County this year for state rep and for state senate and for county council and everything under the sun. That's probably emblematic of the entire region.
Yeah.
We have so many races in Missouri this year. And folks, if you're waiting to November to vote on these races, you're going to pretty much miss the boat, because most of these contests are going to be decided in August. Whichever Republican comes out of these primaries, and probably for the Democrats too, that's going to be whoever wins those races in November. So you better start studying, going. Sounds like a lot of people are getting informed early, getting engaged, because Chris, as of today, I believe we are a mere 7 weeks, 49 days from August 6, 2024, the primary for the state of Missouri.
Yeah, speaking of Jeffco, a big announcement today. The Missouri Right to Life endorsed Mary Elizabeth Coleman, Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, for the Secretary of State's race.
Now, was that MRL or was that the Susan B. Anthony PAC?
I thought that was Missouri Right to Life. Okay. I was pretty sure that's what I saw. If I am wrong, please someone correct me, but I thought for sure it was Missouri Right to Life gave their endorsement to her. So that's a big deal. As everyone knows, Bob Onder last week received the Missouri Right to Life endorsement. That is a coveted endorsement in Missouri politics, and we'll see how that shakes up the race, which I'm sure will.
Yes, Bob received that for the congressional race, which we're going to speak with him about that at 5:25, and we're going to talk to him about one of his signature issues that he fought for every single year he was in the House and the Senate here in the state of Missouri, and that was illegal immigration reform. We have the presidential order, the executive order. Joe Biden, once again, wrecking damage on the country, courtesy of his pen. Bob Onder was one of the lead advocates for illegal immigration reform in the state of Missouri, and it's one of the reasons many people say that it's not as bad here. It could always be worse, but it's not as bad as we see in some of our other neighboring states.
Yeah, and the president today announced this program. They've been telegraphing it for the last couple of weeks. And actually, last time we talked about this, it was with Dr. Randy Tobler, who unfortunately will not be with us today. But I asked him about this proposal to allow those that are illegal who have married American citizens to stay in this country and receive green cards. I was saying, doesn't this actually give an incentive for illegals to marry Americans and in order to stay in this country? country and have benefits. The old rule was that if you were illegal and you were married to an American, you had to leave the country for 10 years and come back. Under this proposal by the Biden administration, going bypassing Congress, and we've seen many, many times how this is illegal, says they will waive the 10-year rule. And if you're here, married to an American citizen, you can take advantage of this program, get a green card, and be legal.
So it's
amnesty. Boy, that's no incentive there, is it?
No, not at all. They're not trying to make the border crisis and catastrophe even worse. Chris, we just got a text, you and I both did, from State Senator Nick Schroer. He's listening very closely to the show. He said, Mary Elizabeth Coleman received the national Susan B. Anthony endorsement. However, something neither of us knew, Denny Hoskins received the exclusive endorsement for Secretary of State.
Thank you, Senator Schroer. I appreciate that update.
So, and double endorsements.
Double endorsements.
Yeah. So, Susan B. Anthony goes to Mary Elizabeth Coleman. Missouri Right to Life goes to Denny Hoskins. Everybody wants those coveted endorsements this time of year, don't they?
Yep. And one more shout out to Jefferson County. And this is a program note for Friday. Cecily Williams, who is running for state representative in Jeffco, will be on the show on Friday in studio. That's a long drive, Tim. I appreciate her coming in. And she was there last night at the debate or at the forum. Had probably 10 or 15 people there. Had a lot of people packed in. They all were wearing the same T-shirts. And as you know, Tim, as someone who has been in politics and knows about grassroots, when you can show that type of support, that means a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It really does. Chris, speaking of Jefferson County, we're going to be there next week. Let me tell you about both of our events next week. We've got two events next week. So we would love, sounds like last night's event was huge and packed. We would love to pack. We don't want to wear you all out, but sorry, it's campaign silly season. You're just going to have to go to all these events, and we'd love to see you all multiple times. We have two more events next week that News Talk STL is involved with and presenting for all of you all in News Talk STL Nation. Next Tuesday, Saving America 2024, The Economy and the Courts, featuring the Heritage Foundation's Joel Griffith and, of course, our weekly legal eagle, Zach Smith. June 25th, Tuesday, St. Charles Funny Bone at the Streets of St. Charles, sponsored by West News Magazine, the St. Louis Young Republicans, and Mid-Rivers News Magazine. Tickets, newstalkstl.com. They are free, but you have to reserve them because, of course, Funny Bone is a limited venue. Lots of space there, but you got to get a seat reserved. And then, Chris, we're going to be back in Jefferson County next week on Thursday. I swung by today to say hello to Johnny Douse. We're going to be at Johnny's Hideout in beautiful High Ridge. Chris, I was out there today, and today was cooler, a lot cooler than yesterday. It was gorgeous out at Johnny's. I mean, everything is in full bloom, of course, because it's summertime. They've got the sunset patio, the cattleman's grill, the train station bar. Everything's rocking and rolling at Johnny's. We're going to be out there for the debate watch party. Chris, Joey, and I will be broadcasting 4 to 6 p.m., then we'll take a little break, have a little dinner. You can come out early. You can come out late. You can have a bite with us. And then at 7:30 p.m., we will take to the little main stage there inside Johnny's, do a little pregame. And the debate will start at 8. We'll all watch together. It'll be a crowd. It'll be an interactive experience, as I'm sure we'll all be cheering and jeering at the 40-plus big screens that Johnny told me today he will be putting all of them on the debate, turning up the volume, and we're going to have a great time together.
Yes, June 27th is going to be a fantastic time. Come on out to Johnny's. This will probably be our fourth, I think, broadcast out there, but nothing like this. Election night, this is must-see TV if you are a political junkie or care about your country. Even the left, the Democrats, have forecasted this debate held in the summertime, the first ever earliest debate that there will be a sizable crowd watching this debate. People's eyes will be focused, of course, on President Biden's performance. Will he freeze up? Will he be able to hold up for 90 minutes? So come on out to Johnny's. We're going to have a good time and may watch the collapse of a presidential campaign on June 27th at Johnny's.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think the Democrats agreed to have this debate this early in case Joe Biden has a catastrophic, catatonic moment? Chris, he had another one today right in the middle of Columbo and Katie. He was given some speech, and Tony and Katie went to it. And, Chris, he had this weird—he was talking, and then he kind of drifted off a little bit and started talking to like the side, like this, like to the side. And he started this mumbling gibberish. It was the weirdest thing in the world. And then he kind of snapped back into reality. So do you think they're having this debate this early in case there is a catastrophe? They can be like, look, Bidens, we can't do this anymore. There's no way you can run in November.
What I'm hearing, what the pundits are saying left and right, is the polls show Joe Biden at 37%, much lower, a couple of points lower than President Trump ever was. Even though it's been negative news, Donald Trump has been in the news 24/7. Mm-hmm. We see that his poll numbers are only going up after the conviction. We see him reaching out to African-American voters and Hispanic voters and other non-traditional Republican voters, and the polls are showing that he's doing very, very well. They think that they're doing this to shake the race up, to try to try to change the momentum in this race. It all seems to be going towards Donald Trump's way. I think I agree with them. They've got to do something because Donald Trump and Biden and Kamala Harris are only going backwards, and the economy and all of that is not working in their favor right now.
I mean, try to find a positive headline about anything in Joe Biden's America today. You've got horrific, violent, illegal immigrant crime. You've got inflation that's just roaring right along. You've got an energy crisis. We look like complete nincompoops on the international stage. You had Joe Biden wandering off by himself in a field at the G7, and the Italian Prime Minister Meloni had to like gently bring him back. Obama has to help him off of stages. There's no good news anywhere in Biden's America that I can see.
Yeah, and the campaign also, they see that, as I was saying, the momentum is shifting towards Donald Trump's side. And the only chance that they can see that they really have a chance to turn this around is with the convention, which is in late July. That only leads a couple of months until November. And the pundits and the Democratic strategists think that that is way too late. So they've got to have these debates. They got to shake things up early. They think that Donald Trump's convictions will hurt him. I've got a story here in the stack that shows that the Biden administration or the Biden reelection campaign is spending $50 million on a campaign calling Donald Trump a convicted criminal. They believe that that is the route for them to go to try to hurt Donald Trump, even though polls are showing that it's not. Only 21% of people said that it would affect their vote, so it's having no effect at all. But we're seeing a floundering campaign, and they've got to do something to shake it up, and this is what they believe they can do.
And to your last point, how ironic is it going to be to have Hunter Biden potentially under the threat and auspices of another felony criminal trial in September?
Yeah,
that's the last thing the Biden campaign needs.
And what's
needs.
Even worse about that, Tim, is these crimes with the IRS can link Joe Biden and the Biden crime family. These IRS payments to Joe Biden that or to Hunter Biden that he didn't account for, that goes back to where did this money come from? How was that money earned? How was it arranged? Was Joe Biden involved with if any of it at all? The Hunter Biden laptop seems to suggest that. So there's a whole heap of trouble for Hunter and Joe Biden in this next trial coming up.
One more piece of housekeeping before we go to our first break here. Katie Fitzpatrick informed us before we went on air this afternoon that after less than 3 years on the air, we are a bare handful of people away from 5,000 likes on our Facebook page. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. A station that's less than 3 years old. So if you've already liked us, thank you. Give a share to like your friends, your family. Come on, folks. She told me it's like less than 10 people. And so we would love to hit 5,000 likes here during the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show so we can do a little celebratory hoo-ha or something. I'm sure Joey's got all kinds of lights and camera and action ready to go.
Right. You know, I don't know the difference between likes and follows exactly, but remember we had some sort of prize for the people when we got to 4,000 follows that Vic and Tony were going to smash each other with pies.
Ah, yeah. Yes.
And that never happened, but our likes are already at 5,000, so this pie face contest needs to happen immediately.
It does.
Vic and Tony, I need you on camera smashing pies at each other's
faces. Do it in the hallway. Yeah, so come on, folks. Jump on our Facebook page and share the page with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Let's get to those 5,000 likes this afternoon.
And before we go to break, Tim, we've got to talk about, I believe, today is Tuesday, and as we always say, there's an election somewhere. And one race where all the eyes of the nation are on is Virginia. Freedom Caucus Chairman Bob Good is under fire from Donald Trump because Bob Good endorsed DeSantis during the campaign. And then you have McCarthy, who is against him as well because Good was one of the aides who ousted him. Does he survive tonight? That is the big question. That's the race that everyone will be looking at tonight and talking about tomorrow. Your thoughts?
Well, McCarthy lost his battle to oust Nancy Mace. She survived, and so we'll see if maybe he gets another turn at it here. Bob Good is a very popular conservative guy. However, he's apparently made some strategic errors in maybe going after too many of the wrong people. Because as you pointed out, he's taking incoming from a lot of weird, disparate directions, right? That may have been, he may have bitten off more than he can chew. My understanding is from the folks in Congress I know is that Bob Good's a good guy. He's a great congressman, very conservative, but he may have made one too many enemies. We'll see. I know a lot of money is being spent in that race.
And that is the key to politics. You're going to make enemies, but make sure that you make more friends than you do make enemies. Because when you make too many enemies, all of your friends will gang against you when they see that you are weak and will take you out and will eat you like some animal out on the African plain. We see it so many times in politics. You'll see the old adage occurring, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Always have one more enemy than you have.
Exactly.
They always have one more friend than you have enemies.
And a lot of people don't realize that simple, don't understand that simple principle.
We've got a big show, as we mentioned, and we have at 425, David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. There's a major update on the St. Louis City earnings tax case. What might that be? David's going to break all that down for us. And there is a lawsuit, another, it seems like there's lawsuits every week when we talk to David Stokes. There's another one seeking to block big University City renovations. That's right in your backyard.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
We're going to get an update on that as well. All of that with David Stokes here in just a few minutes. At 4:45, we'll have Chris's Corner today.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some 2024 Trump update news. Boy, you look at what I'm going to talk about, you pretty much say this race is over. And if you were a Vegas bookmaker, the odds look pretty good for Trump right now.
Mm-hmm. They do. Yeah, we had a long way to go, but it is interesting how the polling seems to be all, as you pointed out earlier, heading entirely in one direction. Speaker stump speech at 5:07. I'm going to talk about where the national parties have gone these days and the biggest closing arguments they will likely make in November. The demographics have dramatically shifted between Republicans, between R's and D's. I'll talk about that at 5:07. At 5:25, as we mentioned, we'll have Dr. Bob Onder on this afternoon to talk about this bizarre White House mass amnesty plan. The great replacement theory, which we were called racist for pointing out, is apparently exactly what the Democrats are trying to foist on the nation. We'll also talk about his race for the 3rd congressional district. So, jam-packed show today. Thanks for being here. Make sure you get us to 5,000 likes on Facebook, and we'll continue to update you on that and so much more. When the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show rolls on, David Stokes next, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Potentially thousands of people in the bi-state are likely owed money from St. Louis. This all comes from the lawsuit over pandemic remote workers still paying taxes, but not even being in the city of St. Louis. Tonight, First Alert 4 has learned top city leaders are bracing for a major money issue.
On Monday, the mayor of St. Louis will address the settlement here at City Hall. But just 2 weeks ago, she advised against people who qualify for this refund from doing so.
I would make a plea to those who are considering filing refunds for the earnings tax. The earnings tax pays for the public services that you receive every time you come into the city of St. Louis.
4:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Tim, I got to be honest with you. I am seriously considering filling out the paperwork to get my 1% earnings tax refund. Mm-hmm. There was a time during the pandemic that you and I and here a lot of folks at the show did our shows from home.
That's right.
I contracted COVID 1 year ago today. Actually, that I looked on my Facebook page and I remember that whole thing. And for a week there, I did my show from home. So I'm thinking about doing it. Let's see what our next guest thinks about that.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about spikes. I had a very short spiked.
It was like, I knew there's some spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
David, welcome to the show. We are just heard there that clip about the city is giving workers their earnings tax money back. Plus, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch article said that the mayor is looking at alternatives to the earnings tax. Has the Show Me Institute's hard work beginning to pay off?
Well, I hope so. I hope we had, you know, something to do with this. We've been certainly drumming it, banging this drum for 20 years. As long as we've been around. So, you know, kudos to the city here. It took them way too long to do the right thing, but, you know, better late than never to stop demanding that the remote workers pay the earnings tax and to create a simple way for them to seek refunds each year and to allow people, without forcing them to file a lawsuit, to allow people to file for the last 3 to 4 years here for remote work. I think a lot of people are going to do that. Although, to be honest, in the long run, I think the city will find that it doesn't hurt them as much as they fear. That has been Kansas City's experience, that most people do not apply for a refund, especially now that people are working in the office three to four days a week. I expect the city will follow Kansas City's lead on that. However, you know, you might have plenty of people who, like myself, wouldn't bother applying for, say, 1 year refunds, but now you make that a 3 or 4 year refund application, you might be willing to do that. So it remains to be seen. I certainly do hope that people exercise their rights as they choose to, and if they want to apply for the refund, no matter how big or how small, they should do so.
David, stepping back from this, look at it from a little broader perspective, would you enlighten our audience as to, you know, approximately how many urban areas in the country have this type of taxation model? And for those cities who don't have it, what do they do instead? What's the better way to run the railroad than to have an earnings tax, I guess, is my long and short of my question.
I'll start with the first question, and as much as supporters of it will say that lots of cities have it, the fact is that not many cities do. Outside of Pennsylvania and Ohio, where they are common and where just about every municipality has it, outside of Pennsylvania and Ohio, earnings taxes are very rare, very rare. Out of the 100 largest cities in the country, about 20 of them, or a little bit 20 or 22 or so, have earnings taxes. And again, that includes about five or six of those are in Pennsylvania and Ohio. So you get beyond that, they're very rare. New York has one, San Francisco, Detroit, St. Louis, Kansas City. In Michigan, there's probably a dozen cities that have them, a couple more in Kentucky. That's about it. There's very, very few cities that have this, and it is not common, and it is a bad way to fund local government. And the economics of this are very clear. We don't just quote Show Me Institute studies on it, although the studies we've done on it by Professor Joe Haslick and Professor Howard Wall are excellent and will stand all scrutiny, but other studies have shown the same thing. So earnings taxes are rare, and cities should fund themselves through a higher portion, primarily a property tax.
Mm-hmm.
I know your listeners are probably like, whoa, I don't need higher property taxes, and I get it, but the fact is this is a stunning fact that your listeners will probably be surprised at. Overall, cities in Missouri fund themselves with property taxes less than cities in any other state. And I know your listeners aren't going to believe that because they all saw giant property tax increases in 2023. But I'm not saying property taxes are less in Missouri. I'm saying cities in Missouri fund themselves with property taxes less than any other state. We are too heavily, outside of St. Louis and Kansas City, we're too heavily weighing municipalities on sales taxes, and they should be a little lower and property taxes a little higher. And then in St. Louis and Kansas City, of course, the earnings tax has it just completely out of whack. That should be gone. And in St. Louis and Kansas City, there should be slightly higher property and sales taxes to make up for that. And of course, there should also be less government in the city of St. Louis. They should be making cuts where they have to make cuts. Look to share services with St. Louis County or other cities on a voluntary basis and making cuts where they can, and making changes where they can, such as selling the water division in the city of St. Louis and privatizing that. So there's a lot the city can do, and I hope this new commission that the mayor has appointed is willing to think outside the box and think about radical change and not do what a similar commission in Kansas City did just over a decade ago, which was just come back for a report of basically more of the same and just exactly what the politicians wanted.
Speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, you know the word scheme is thrown around a lot now in politics to describe a policy or a law or something that people don't agree with. Last week, we talked about a scheme that University City was trying to foist on the taxpayers by trying to renovate the jail and another building with some complex scheme that didn't make much sense to me. I didn't think to you as also. I think someone else sees this as a scheme because a lawsuit has been filed to block these renovations. Your thoughts as a U City resident, fellow U City resident.
Right. A long time U City resident for both of us. So, right. I do support the idea behind the lawsuit. I'm not involved in it at all, but it's been filed by former mayor Shelley Welsh and former council member Stephen Kraft, who's a neighbor of mine, just lives about a half a block away. And they filed it because they want to force a public vote on it. Seven, 8 years ago, University City voters passed an ordinance that the sale or lease of any public building or public land would require a vote of the people. I don't even think I voted for that. I'd likely voted against that. But I like government to be done in a Republican format, meaning we elect people to make decisions. I'm not a big fan of constant referendums and plebiscites and the like in every case. That aside, it passed, and now you have this new plan, which I'm not opposed to the new plan to renovate these two new buildings and use them for court and police functions. I'm not automatically opposed to it, but to see the city sort of getting around the language of this law that the voters passed by saying we're not selling any of this land as part of financing it. We're doing a long-term lease of equipment to the private sector. We'll pay rent and then we'll get it back. Well, clearly they're just trying to get around the language of the referendum that the voters passed. And voters hate when politicians do that. I dislike when politicians do that. So I hope they do put it up for a vote. And I say this again as somebody who didn't support it when this thing was passed 7-8 years ago, and who would likely vote for the plan this time. Although the more I hear about details of it and how the bond financing costs are going to dramatically increase it from $28 million to over $40 million, perhaps I'd be think about it a little more askance. So I support the lawsuit. I think it's sad that it's necessary in the first place, because I think we should just be rehabbing these buildings and paying for them as we go. And if it has to be issuing bonds and if there has to be a small tax increase to fund that, I think I could support that. I don't like when politicians try to get around and the city manager in this case try to get around the plain language of the law.
David, I don't have my dictionary with me. What does askance mean?
Askance is to look at something is to look at something to side eye something.
Chris, it's kind of like this, kind of like that. You know, if anybody's watching on the cameras, kind of like give side eye.
I'm just messing with David using these Shakespearean words.
Yes, here. These SAT words. Hey, David, so, you know, you kind of answered some of my questions there, but I want to add, so, you know, a lot of times when these big proposals and plans come up in localities, you know, the people of those localities, they generally, you get a feel for kind of what the community thinks. It sounds like if they can convince a skeptic like you that this may be a good idea, you know, why are they afraid to are they afraid to put this up for a vote? I mean, what's kind of the popular opinion that you get the, like, what's your feeling, your intuition from the community? If they would put this up for a vote, would you guess that it would pass or that it would fail?
I don't know, and I wish I could give you a better answer than that, Tim. It's not going to be a stunning fact to you that Chris's and my politics are in the minority within University City.
You don't say.
this is not the most stunning fact you're going to hear today. So I don't know, but I don't think they should be afraid of putting it on the ballot. But you know, then again, you hear how much these bond financing costs are going to dramatically increase this cost in the next 30 years. And that's sort of the bigger question there. So often, in order to avoid controversy, they might say, oh, there's no tax increase for her. There's no tax increase. So they don't have to have a vote. But that just means they're financing things with debt that really dramatically increase the cost in the long run, where sometimes you'd be better off with a small tax increase or a modest tax increase to pay for it and save money in the long run. I don't like not giving voters the credit to think it through. And again, I say this as somebody who thinks that elected officials should be making these decisions in most cases, and fewer things, less things. I don't remember which one's right there. I'll look askance in my own language. But I think fewer things should be up to referendum. But the law says that this one, I think, needs to be, so I think it should be. And I it's going to be a very interesting lawsuit to follow, and something I look forward to talking about on the show over these next several months. I think it should be put up to a vote of the people. And yeah, just speaking for myself, I can't speak for Chris here, I think I could potentially support it.
Well, if I looked askance, I'd have to say that I support it as well. We're speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, as Director of Policy and the Municipal Policy of the Show Me Institute, I want to ask you about the revelations last week in the Post-Dispatch about Sam Page offering a job to a St. Louis County Council candidate, asking her to weigh quitting the race. Is that a proper municipal policy for transparent government? And should other municipal governments in St. Louis County and around the country, should they adopt that thing that Sam Page is doing there? That tactic?
Well, obviously no. And I will admit that for as major an issue as I just got back in town yesterday, and I was out of town for when this broke. I was out of town from the middle of last week till just yesterday. So I need to read up a little more on this so that I have every part of every detail. But of course, you know, making offers of value in exchange for political moves is completely inappropriate and wrong. And I certainly hope, as I read more about it and find out more about it, that it didn't really happen to the extent that the headlines have said they did. And if it did, then it's very troubling. Anybody should be troubled by something like this. That's just not something elected officials need to do. But again, I was traveling for much of it, and I do need to fill myself up on it just a little bit more.
David, before I let you go, events, upcoming items, features at the Show Me Institute?
Well, we've got one starting here in 15 minutes in Clayton, Cafe Napoli. So if any of your listeners are in the Clayton area and want to bump over to Cafe Napoli right now and listen to our chief economist, Aaron Hedlund, give a talk and sort of hear more about what the Show Me Institute does, people are welcome to join. 5 o'clock, Cafe Napoli, and whatever. But even if you can't make it tonight, remember, Cafe Napoli is a great spot to visit anytime. And I guess I just gave him a free plug.
Will Larry Connors be there?
I don't think Larry is on the RSVP list, but I would love it if he showed up. We'd be delighted to see him.
David, I got to ask you one more thing. I want to ask you about St. Louis City's plan to pay the homeless to clean up streets and pick up trash. You know, I have always been in favor of people that are needing public help, public assistance, should do something for that help in order to give them the dignity of working for their pay. I'm surprising the liberals are doing this. Your thoughts on it?
Oh, you know, like any of these plans, the devil's in the details. but overall, I'm not opposed to it. I think it's a good idea. And, you know, what we've seen out of Mayor Jones's administration in City Hall over the past year for dealing with things like this is, you know, a guaranteed income program, which is a terrible idea, a loan program to help people pay their back taxes so they can get stickers on their car with taxpayer money, which was a terrible idea. So I'll give the mayor's office and the city credit for this latest proposal is a good one. You know, absolutely. If it were to come out and be as straightforward as it sounds, a way to use RAMS money, I think it's RAMS money involved. If not, it perhaps it's some of the leftover ARPA funds, federal funds there. But allowable use to do that, I think it could be a good small, a good program. It's my understanding it would be a relatively small program, perhaps just a pilot, but could get behind it and give the, I'll certainly give Mayor Jones credit on this one. I think this sounds like a good idea.
And that is David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. You can reach him at theshowmeinstitute.org. And on S, David C. Stokes. Good luck with the event tonight, David, and we look forward to speaking with you again next Tuesday.
I'll see you. I'll be in studio.
Oh, great.
At least that's the plan for now. So
bring gifts.
So put up the bunting and order the cake and get the cocktails ready. I'll be there with you guys in studio.
Bring gifts. Bring us some Show Me swag.
Deal.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a great evening.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, 444 and Chris's Corner is up next. We'll take on some of the 2024 headlines, talk about Biden, talk about President Trump next on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.
The president is announcing two major new immigration policies. The first executive action, it could protect up to 500,000 undocumented immigrants from being deported. Now, these are people who are married to U.S. citizens. They've been in this country for at least 10 years. And under this new policy, they can apply to legally live and work in this country without having to leave the U.S. first and risk separation from their families for years. Now, the second executive action from the president coming today, this is on Dreamers. These are undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, and they're now adults. This new policy makes it easier for them to get work visas if they have a college degree and a high-skilled job offer.
450 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and I know this is an election year, and this is an election year political ploy here, but when are the Democrats, especially this administration, going to learn that the President of the United States cannot change immigration law through executive order? Mm-hmm. They have been slapped back on a couple of occasions trying to do this, and Joe Biden and Democrats even admitted it early in the year. It was like, hey, we're going to do this anyway because this is what our constituents want. This is what we think is right. And let the courts strike it down. At least we had the policy. excuse me. At least we had the policy for a few months until it struck down. That's no way to operate a government.
He always seems to make it worse, Chris. Yeah. You know what I mean? I know he's trying to play for political points, but every time he picks up the pen and the phone, he seems to only make the situation worse off, not better.
And under this proposed rule today, as we stated earlier, that will allow those who are illegal in this country that are married to American citizens, they'll be able to stay in this country and obtain green cards. Under this proposed rule, roughly 500,000 immigrants in the country without authorization, that used to be called illegals, I'm reading from Political here, about 50,000 people under 21 whose parents are married to a citizen will be able to apply for a green card without leaving the country. More pandering to the illegal crowd. It's not really moving the needle with Hispanics. Let's talk about this more in Chris's Corner.
Chris. And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, Tim, the president has the big debate next week, June 27th. Mm-hmm. Of course, we will be out at Johnny's. Last week, the president was in Europe on the G7 meeting. We know the president's 81 years old. These type of trips tire him out, would tire any old person out. And remember, I predicted last week, I said, look, next week, we're not going to see the president at all. All he's going to be doing, I may have said it yesterday, all he's going to be doing is debate prep and resting him up for these debates so that he looks fresh. Well, today in Politico, we have a report that First Lady Jill Biden and the president will mark the 12th anniversary of DACA. So they're on their immigration stint today.
Of course.
There'll be an event in the East Room. They'll also go later that in the day to McLean, Virginia for a campaign event. And guess where? It's Tuesday, right? They will be going to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware this week on a Tuesday, which I can bet you Joe Biden will not fly back to the White House at all before the debate. He's going to stay there in Rehoboth Beach. Just more evidence that this president does not carry a very heavy workload, and that's because he is senile. Bad news for the president today in the courts. President Biden's Title IX rule that established new protections for LGBTQ plus students was blocked in six more states by a federal judge in Kentucky. So that's good there to see some sanity reigning there in the heartland, of course. And in New York today, New York's highest court on yesterday dismissed Donald Trump's appeal of his gag order imposed on his Manhattan criminal trial. I think this just gives even more evidence to many people that this is interference in the case. Look, the case is over. Why can't the president speak out and defend himself, especially when he's being criticized by people on his campaign on this? You know, that old saying that was in Breaking Bad, hiding in plain sight. The Democrats are really starting to do that. Joe Biden, as we said earlier, they're getting nervous, Tim. That's why they want these debates so early. They have announced a major new $50 million June ad push. Yesterday, it's over Donald Trump's conviction in New York. The name of the ads are Character Matters. It references Trump's 34-count conviction in Manhattan. And it talks about the E. Jean Carroll case, liable for sexual abuse, and the $355 million civil fraud ruling against his business. That says in the ad, quote, "This election is between a convicted criminal who's only out for himself and for a president who's fighting for your family." We will see how believable that is to people. As right now, people aren't believing in a new political magazine. Ipsos poll showed that 21% of independents say the convictions make them less likely to vote for Trump, only 21%, and that it will be an important factor. Meanwhile, 43% of all Americans say the charges are brought to help Biden. Let me read that to you again. This is from Politico. 43%, nearly half of all Americans, believe the charges were brought to help Biden. That is a very, very interesting development there. Iowa, you know, Iowa's known for the Iowa caucuses in January and the cold months. But after that, they pretty much drop off the political map. But Tim, Iowa is back, and they're back big. A poll by Ann Selzer, and she does the Iowa Des Moines Register poll up there, which is the gold standard, has Donald Trump beating Joe Biden 50% to 32% in a multi-candidate race. A huge, huge warning sign for President Biden. He lost Iowa in 2020 by 8 points. He's down 18 points here in the summer before the election. That is a huge, huge swing there. We've seen a lot of African-American voters and Hispanic voters that have been shifting to Donald Trump. One segment that has been hardcore Democrat for years have been the Silicon Valley tech entrepreneurs. Well, that has changed. Reports have shown that Donald Trump did fundraisers for Donald Trump in Silicon Valley. Ro Khanna, the huge super liberal Democrat in California who represents Silicon Valley, he said Democrats shouldn't take the liberal stronghold for granted. They raised more than $2 million $50 million, I think it is here, for Donald Trump lately. So the capitalists in Silicon Valley are not going to swing all the way for the Democrats. And that is Chris's Corner. Speaker stump speech at 5:07.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Eric Burleson just issued a press release today, and it made me think Burleson goes booyah. I'll tell you all about that.
And 5:27, we'll speak with 5:21, Dr. Bob Onder. We'll talk to him about the president's mass amnesty plan and his race for Congress. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.